March Madness fix.
Puck, baseline, up for the shot, dive, off the glass, the game is over.
Gonzaga, the slipper still fits.
It's over, Michigan has won a national championship.
I got a feeling.
Holy mackerel, holy mackerel.
Tonight's gonna be a good night.
The shot.
Yes, it's the shot by Tate George, wins it.
Williams could tie it with a three. He does.
Smart takes the shot. Indiana wins the championship. So now Valpo's going to have to go the length of the court. It's to Jenkins, to Drew for the win. Gone.
Oh! Bryce Drew did it. Valpo has won the game. A miracle.
Wittenberg. Oh, it's a long way.
Puts it up.
Yes! Kamara gets it ahead. Cooper out in front of everybody. Gives it to Katie Dunn. Her shot is up. No good. And the Fighting Irish of Notre Dame have won the national championship.
Your hosts are Eric Hansen and Darren Pritchett.
It is 7 minutes after 5 o'clock on this Friday evening. This is Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat. Presented by Budweiser. Great times are waiting. Grab some Buds. And we're also brought to you by Notre Dame Hockey. The Fighting Irish host the Penn State Nittany Lions in a Big Ten Conference Tournament semifinal Saturday night at the Compton Family Ice Arena. Get your tickets at und.com/tickets. Sports Beat tonight is 90 minutes long because at 6:30, we bring you ESPN Radio's coverage of the ACC Tournament semifinals. And game number one pits the regular season champion Virginia Cavaliers taking on the Clemson Tigers. And in game number two, Tobacco Road at its best, it'll be the Duke Blue Devils taking on the North Carolina Tar Heels. Both games live right here on your sports leader, 96.1 WSBT. I'm WSBT Radio Sports Director Darren Pritchett alongside Eric Hansen. He is the Fighting Irish Football Insider for the South Bend Tribune. Spring football practice is on hold for about 11 days as they enjoy some downtime. So we're going to have plenty of time to talk spring football throughout March. But we have really a heck of a storyline developing here in South Bend right now with this Fighting Irish basketball team. Depending on who you listen to and who you ask, you get different opinions on whether Mike Bray's Fighting Irish basketball team will make the Field of 68 and get into the NCAA tournament. Opinions are all over the board. I don't know if I've ever seen anything like this. And again, as we've talked about, this is really unprecedented to see a team on the bubble get an All-American player back after missing, at least in this case, 15 games. And what will the committee do with them? And you're going to hear some different opinions throughout the program. Earlier this afternoon, I spoke with ESPN college basketball analyst Seth Greenberg. He offered his perspective on what he thinks will happen to Mike Bray's Fighting Irish basketball team. In just a couple of minutes, I'm going to play back some audio from a guest on the Wingo Golic show this morning at 5 on WSBT Radio. This person used to sit as the chair on the selection committee. He'll offer his thoughts on the Notre Dame resume. And we'll chime in as well our thoughts on this very intriguing storyline as we've got a long time to wait before Selection Sunday. We'll have a selection show here on WSBT Radio from 6 to 8 on Sunday. And again, the committee and the television production of Selection Sunday is going to be totally different this year. It's on TBS, first of all. So if you want the brackets on television, it's on TBS. And they will unveil the 68 teams alphabetically. And then we'll go back and show you the bracket. So you will know in the first 10 minutes whether the Fighting Irish make the Field of 68 or will they be hosting NIT basketball action next week. Say it ain't so. That's where we stand. Eric and Darren with you. And let's talk some basketball as the Irish last night ran out of gas. They lose to the Duke Blue Devils 88-70 as Duke shot the ball extremely well. Notre Dame came in. They did not want to give up three-point shots. They were going to give up the two-point shots. Well, when you play behind those post players, Eric, it gives them a really good opportunity to score, and Duke was 28 of 48 inside the three-point line. That's about 56% shooting from two-point range. And I don't care what happens from the three-point line, that's difficult to overcome. And with the goal being trying to shut down the three, Notre Dame didn't even do that, as Duke was 8 of 17 for 47% from the three-point line. And let's face it, no excuses, but they ran out of gas. 3 games in 3 days, you just saw a different Notre Dame team coming down the stretch in the second half. And no, that's not an excuse, because what the regular season gave us, Notre Dame was a 10 seed, Duke was a 2 seed, and they got to sit and watch for a couple of days. But Duke was the better team last night. They played extremely well. And Eric, I just kind of feel like that the Irish had to use so much energy coming back in that Virginia Tech game in the second half, 21 down with 15 to go. You just wonder in the second half if that gas tank finally hit empty. And I don't want to take anything away from Duke. They were the better team. They deserved to win. But you just wonder if the Irish just didn't have enough left in the tank to get over the hump.
Well, Duke is playing really good basketball right now, and they're a difficult matchup. And they were the first time when Notre Dame played them without Bonzi Colson and Matt Farrell. They shot over 50% from the three-point line that game. The one good thing that happened that game was Marvin Bagley III wasn't himself in that game, and he certainly was himself and more last night. But Darren, the last time I think that one of the last times we did a sports beat over at the Joy Center, Duke was warming up. And I don't know if it was last season or two seasons ago, but you just look at them and you're like, you know, their guards are bigger than Notre Dame's forwards, you know.
It was last year because they had the tripper.
Okay, they had the tripper. The thing is, they are just a difficult matchup. And once they learn how to play some defense, you know, they're going to be a really difficult out in the NCAA tournament. It'll be interesting to see how North Carolina matches up with them tonight in the semifinal. But I think regardless of what happens in that game, they're a difficult matchup. I don't know that a lot of teams really can deal with their inside game and then also the three-point shooting.
And I will say this, they are still susceptible to be kicked out of this tournament early because of their defensive principles.
Correct.
They are not great defensively. They played that zone. And you know what? I think I was dead wrong last night on Twitter, because I found it interesting. Duke was just going to give Bonzi Colson that 8 to 10 foot shot the whole game. And I thought that was a mistake. But taking a step back, that really was just Coach K saying, Bonzi, if you can score 60, go ahead, but we're not going to allow you to get those guards in position to bury a bunch of threes. And if you think about a lot of the threes taken by Notre Dame last night, and they were 5 of 23 for 21%, not many of them, it didn't feel like, were close to the three-point line. Duke extended their defense with their length. It's kind of like playing Syracuse, and they forced a lot of 23-foot three-point shots. And unfortunately, Notre Dame was unable to knock down those shots last night. From the three, Farrell, 3 of 11, Gibbs, 1 of 6, Pfluger, 1 of 5, and Bonzi went 0 of 1, and they finished 5 of 23. But their length, that only causes you problems on the offensive end. They did a really nice job of taking away reasonable-looking three-point shots from that Notre Dame group, and they just forced Notre Dame to take some shots a little deeper than really they wanted to. Now, we know Farrell can hit those shots. He's the type of kid we've seen him hit those 25-foot shots, so that's well within his range, but it just was not falling last night. And again, when you allow Duke to shoot the way they shot the ball last night, it's pretty much game, set, and match. You would have been red hot from the three-point line to beat them last night. So where do we stand? The analytics. Let's just go with analytics for a second. We'll throw away the eyeball test for just a second. The latest numbers, Notre Dame and the RPI is 64. And I always say this, it's a broken record, but apparently the committee never looks at RPI. It's just a statistical formula to try to rate the teams 1 through 360, whatever. And Notre Dame is 64. Usually Power 5 conference teams in the top 40 of the RPI get in. Sometimes a Valley team or an Atlantic 10 team in the top 40 will not get in. But when you're inside the top 40, you're in good shape as a Power 5. Notre Dame is 64. Their strength of schedule, just fine, 54. Now, their non-conference strength of schedule is 173, but they've been in the 300s the last couple of years, so that number is just fine. Here are the numbers that put Notre Dame at a tough spot. Keeping in mind, you would have to say a lot of these games are without Bonzi Colson, but the facts are when the committee gets to the Notre Dame page on their computer, the RPI top 25, Notre Dame is 1-7 against that group. Against the RPI top 50, they are 3-8. Against the RPI top 100, 8-10. And to me, this number hurts as much as the top 25, 1-7 mark. Notre Dame against the RPI top 150. So there are 68 teams in the field. We're going all the way up to 150. The top 150 RPI teams, Notre Dame is 8-12 against that group. Ball State, Notre Dame lost to them on their home floor with everybody healthy. Ball State got knocked out early in the MAC. Indiana, of course, that neutral site game at Bankers Life Fieldhouse in Indianapolis, up double digits twice. They lose to Indiana in overtime. Indiana is in the 100s in RPI. You lose to Georgia Tech on the road. They are plus 150 in the RPI rankings. So those are the scars on the resume that are hurting them. And honestly, the only way those scars go away is if the committee judges Notre Dame differently than anybody else. And I don't know if this is fair or not. But are they going to judge them post-Bonzi Colson injury? That's Notre Dame's best shot. And Eric, and let me ask you this. So let's take a look at that particular conversation. The Virginia game to wrap up the end of the regular season, Notre Dame played well against the number one team in the country on the road, lost. But since that game, have they looked better than that? Because you think of the Pittsburgh game against an 0-18 team, they had a really rough second half and barely won. You look at the Virginia Tech game, a very poor first half. Then they played the unbelievable second half, rallied to win. So, Eric, you could argue that going into the Duke game, their last 60 minutes of basketball, 40 were not their best, with Bonzi Colson and Matt Farrell healthy. The Duke game, this is where I want your opinion. And you'll hear Seth Greenberg answer this question coming up in just a moment. But I asked Seth, all the bracketologists, including Joe Lenardi, said before the Duke game, Notre Dame just need to have a good showing against Duke. And the chances of them getting in would be good. Now, today, Lenardi was a little more, I'm not sure Notre Dame is going to get in. But do you feel like the showing last night, under the parameters that were set before that game, if they just had a good showing, they probably would get in? Do you think that showing was good enough? And I struggle with that answer.
Right, because you kind of have to be grading on a curve. If you're just saying 18 points on a neutral court, that doesn't seem like that would fit the criteria, even though Notre Dame was close at one point.
Four down at halftime. 3 games in 3 days.
But, you know, if you're going to count the halftime score, then you got to count the halftime score against Virginia Tech, and that was negative 13. So you got to go by the final score, and that's what's kind of scary. And then you start comparing them with, I think, three teams you got to look at: Oklahoma, Texas, and Alabama.
Let's throw Arizona State in there. I'll throw them in the mix.
Okay, Arizona State, too. So, you know, Alabama beat Auburn today and beat them sizably. That hurts Notre Dame.
Jerry Palm put Alabama in his field today on CBSSports.com with that win.
Right. But they've got 14 losses. They have a losing record in a conference that I don't think is as good as the ACC. I think it's balanced. I think the SEC is extremely balanced.
Better than it's been depth-wise in years.
Way better than it's been depth-wise in years. But they lost their final five regular season games before they've won a couple here in the tournament. Now, if they keep winning, their case gets stronger. You know, in Texas, same kind of thing. The Big 12 was incredibly deep this year, but they're 8-10 in the conference. Alabama didn't have a lot of great non-conference wins either. They had some good conference wins. Texas played Duke, lost to them in overtime earlier in the year, lost to Gonzaga in the overtime, lost to Michigan. They did beat Alabama, but they don't have a lot of great non-conference wins either. They did, you know, they lost to a really good Texas Tech team in the Big 12, so they're out. They can't add to their resume. Oklahoma lost in a fishtail game in the Big 12. They didn't even make it to the quarters, and they have 14 losses, I believe. Arizona State, I mean,
good early.
Right. The thing about Notre Dame is you can't – it's not an apples-to-apples comparison. It's really
– I agree.
That's where the numbers just don't add up. You say, who's the best out of the teams that we mentioned, Texas, Oklahoma, Alabama, and Arizona State? You kind of grade them on their own. And then you look at Notre Dame's overall record and their conference record. It's not too different than those teams with their star players the whole season. And I think that's where if the committee goes, well, wait a second, because we're not talking about, let's say, USC who's and UCLA, who I think are on the bubble and are still playing, but they have much better records in their conference and overall than Notre Dame. These teams don't. Admittedly, the Big 12 is incredibly difficult, but...
And see, Eric, that's the issue. If you look at just the analytics, you would say Notre Dame is not getting in.
Right.
But what makes Notre Dame different than all those teams, the major injury to Colson and missing Farrell for a handful of games, is the committee going to say, and I'm not sure they're allowed to think this way, but if those two play, there's probably a couple of these close games that might be flipped in another direction. If the committee is allowed to think that way, Notre Dame gets in. If they have to judge Notre Dame just as they are, then you start bringing all those teams into the conversation. They're very similar in so many ways. There are a lot of scar tissue in all these resumes.
Right.
But to me, I'm not going to be shocked either way how this goes.
Right.
It's unprecedented. We don't know how the committee is truly going to evaluate Notre Dame. If they don't make it, that means they were not allowed to say if Colson and Farrell played, they probably win two more games and they're probably 10-8 in the ACC. If they get in, I think they're going to say that Notre Dame, with those two healthy, are one of the 68 best teams in the country. And even though they're 1-7 and 3-8 and da-da-da-da down the line, they are going to give them the benefit of the doubt. But I don't know if you're allowed to give the benefit of the doubt. That's what makes this so interesting.
Well, I mean, we've certainly seen the flip side of it when a star player gets hurt before the tournament and isn't coming back. We saw that seeding with Kenyon Martin with seeding and so forth. I don't know that somebody's been left out because of it. But when you look at Notre Dame, you know, Bonzi gets hurt in the Georgia Tech game on December 30th. Then they blew out an NCAA team in NC State, beat them by 30, won a tough game at Syracuse, and then they went into the long losing streak. But until Farrell got hurt, they were competitive in those games, losing to North Carolina by 1 point, Georgia Tech on the road by 7, Louisville in double overtime, Clemson by 9, Virginia Tech, Clemson on the road by 9 at full strength. Clemson was then. They were a stronger team. Virginia Tech by 5. Then Farrell goes down. They lose to Duke and NC State in one-sided games. So it's difficult. I think if I'm a committee member and I'm looking at that and I'm measuring them against Oklahoma, Alabama, Texas, and Arizona State, unless Alabama continues to win, I think Notre Dame is a more deserving team than those.
And Eric, I think it goes back to what we do around the college football playoff season. You have to take into account all the numbers, but we have humans making the selection so they can come down to this. If Oklahoma plays Penn State, who wins? If it's that close in the analytical numbers, that's when I think you go to the eyeball test. If Oklahoma plays Penn State in a college football game, who wins? You go around the table, you vote on it, and to me, that team gets the benefit of the doubt. Only in a situation, Eric, where it's too close to call, analytically speaking. I think in this particular case, I think it's fair to get into the eyeball test with Notre Dame because they are different than what this paper shows. They are better than what this paper shows. If Notre Dame plays Alabama in college basketball, who do you think wins right now?
I would say Notre Dame would.
I would agree.
Win those games. Look
against Oklahoma right now. I would take Notre Dame.
Okay.
You're counting.
No, Oklahoma has lost.
Oh, they're brutal.
8 out of their last 10 games.
Notre Dame is 7-5 in their last 12.
Right, and Oklahoma's 2-8 in their last 10.
Mm-hmm.
And then, even then, if you go 1, 2, 3, 4, 13, 14, 15. In their last 15, they've won 4. I mean, that's not a tournament resume. I don't care who you beat because their roster hasn't changed. And even if they lost an outstanding player, they're not getting that player back for the tournament. You know, they beat Wichita State just like Notre Dame did. They beat a USC team by 2. You know, Oregon was a decent win. They did beat Ball State.
Don't even start that conversation.
But I mean, other than them playing in a really difficult conference and having a losing record in that conference, I mean, 4-11 in your last 15, is that a tournament team?
See, that's what it gets down to. How much of it should be how you're playing now and how much of it is your entire resume. To me, how you're playing down the stretch should be part of the tie-breaking formula, if not even more.
I think they've
went back and forth.
They've gone away from that some, but it used to be a big deal back when I was covering basketball, which was, you know, when Dick Vitale was kind of a new thing.
How many teams got in back then?
64.
Was it 64?
I couldn't remember
if it was 48 or not.
I don't think I ever was in the era 48, but I remember going to the tournament as a fan when it was 48. I was covering it at 48.
Eric, let me just say this. I'm going to take off my Notre Dame hat for a second and say this. Common sense is they're in the field. They're one of the best 68 teams. That's just common sense.
Yeah.
When you bring in the numbers, I know it gets cloudier and it gets more nerve-wracking for Fighting Irish fans. But having watched this team to be without their two stars and be as competitive as they were throughout the ACC season, even in the midst of a 7-game losing streak, really the one game that got away from them was the game in Raleigh. Mm. I have to admit, that was the game, watching that in the second half, I'm thinking, this is not going to end well. I did not imagine they would have a chance to get into the tournament. I'll admit it, that Raleigh game, I kind of jumped off the ship. I thought that was just them mentally just kind of being done, out of gas, because they had been through so much. But you know what? They got back up, and they've made this very, very interesting. Common sense says they're one of the best 68 teams.
And I think it's fair to put them in Dayton and make them play their way into the field.
You know what? I have no problem with that. I'll tell you what.
Yeah.
There's not a Notre Dame player or coach that would vote against that particular thought. You know, that's an interesting thought. If you put them in the field, make them earn it, go to Dayton.
Right.
But I just don't know what's going to happen. So here's what we're going to do. We're a little behind, so let's take a break. We'll come back, and I'll offer you two different perspectives. The first one is from Greg Shaheen, who used to be the head of the selection committee years ago. He understands the formula. He was asked about two teams. Strangely enough, Oklahoma Sooners, who you just brought up, and Notre Dame. So we'll play that back. And then I'll play the interview I did earlier this afternoon with Seth Greenberg. We talked mainly about Notre Dame. I slipped in at the end a Purdue and Michigan question. But does Seth think that Notre Dame is in? You'll hear their answers after the break. He's Eric. I'm Darren. It's an analytical day here on the program. Do the Irish get in? Are they in the field of 68? Boy, oh boy, I'd love to be in that committee room right now just to get a little taste of what they're talking about. We'll get to some more analysis coming up. And again, the ACC semifinals are right here on WSBT Radio starting in 1 hour. Eric and Darren with you. Sports be brought to you by Budweiser and Notre Dame Hockey on 96.1 WSBT. 5:34 at WSBT. Eric Hansen, Darren Pritchett with you, talking NCAA tournament possibilities for the Fighting Irish. A little birdie passed along some information. And so it looks like the committee this year will take a look at a couple of other analytical numbers, KenPom.com and Sagarin. And Notre Dame is 28 in the KenPom.com rankings and 24th in the Sagarin ratings. Now, I have absolutely no idea what goes into those numbers. We would have to research that. But that's what it comes down to. And now there's all the talk about the quadrants this year. Notre Dame, for example, 2-8 against quadrant number one. And that would take another show to explain all of that. So I hate to offer numbers that I can't give you great information into what went into those numbers. We could always do that with the college football playoff rankings, but with this, with KenPom and Sagarin, I would have to research that for you. But that's just another side of the analytics. And again, I don't know if the analytics necessarily are the biggest thing right now with the Irish.
Yeah, I don't think
the eyeball test is going to be just as important.
I do too. And again, Notre Dame has a very comparable record to the teams that it's being compared against. That includes the games that 15 games that Bonzi missed. So it's fascinating.
Well, here's what blew my mind last night. Remember we had
Coach K said they should be in.
Thanks, Coach. So after the Virginia Tech win, ESPN posted a number that Notre Dame's chances of getting in the tournament were 72%. Like, oh, perfect. But did you notice in the first half last night, ESPN came back with a graphic that showed if Notre Dame beats Duke, their chances of making the tournament was 100%. And we knew that. But if they lose to Duke, the number fell to 37%. So losing to a top 10 team on a neutral floor drops you from 72 to 37%. I didn't quite understand that. Now, that doesn't matter in the whole scheme of things. It comes down to the committee. But that number really threw me off last night.
Some of ESPN's numbers they throw out there are, I don't understand. During the Virginia Tech game, there was a point where it's 0.8% chance they were going to win that game. Well, Jack Nolan probably knew it was 100%.
That's right.
Didn't he say that on the show? No, he didn't. I'm teasing him.
Well,
but I think everybody kind of went, okay, this is kind of the end. And then they started hitting some threes. But
Well, our buddy Jordan Cornette, former Irish basketball player, does a little bit of work on the Notre Dame Radio Network. He is calling the action on the NBC Sports Network for the Atlantic 10 tournament. And he posted on Twitter a short video this afternoon as Joe Lenardi, ESPN's bracketologist, was courtside, and he asked, hey, what about Notre Dame's chances? And Lenardi had one thumb up and one thumb down. He goes, I don't know. Now, before the Duke game, he felt like common sense says they should be in, and I agree with that. But he felt like a good showing against Duke, and they would be in. So since the Duke game, he's really backed off a little bit on Notre Dame, and he gave the thumbs up, thumbs down, and said, you know, I just don't know. So that's the Lenardi perspective. Now let's go to the Golic and Wingo show this morning. Greg Shaheen, the former head of the selection committee, who knows all about what goes into the process, he was asked a couple of questions about a couple of teams that are on the bubble right now, including the Irish.
Let's look and get your take on some of these teams that might be right there on the bubble, in or out, depending on how these things fall in the conference tournaments. Let's start with Oklahoma. They've lost 8 of their last 10, 11 of their last 15. They lost for the second time to Oklahoma State. Right now, Joe Lenardi has Oklahoma State out, but Oklahoma in, which would drive OSU fans absolutely crazy. But Oklahoma does have one of the stars in college basketball in freshman Trae Young. If it's a toss-up, does that matter to the voters at all?
It doesn't. In fact, in the room, there would be a discussion about the fact that we're not voting for individuals. We're voting for teams and what they did through the year. So, and this is this comes up from time to time when there's a particular star on a team that has not performed well. Oklahoma has to rely on the committee's view of how it opened the season through the end of 2017. And that is just a tough situation to rely upon, especially when you think about the metric that they have is they can show that they really struggled in the Big 12 against teams that they really should have beaten based on the way they started the season. So I think the committee is going to have a tough time giving Oklahoma a way in. It just depends quite honestly, on what happens with some of the other games this weekend.
So right now, would you say they're in or out?
I think they're out.
Okay, what about Notre Dame?
I think Notre Dame's probably in based on what they were able to do through yesterday. I think it's, as I said earlier, it's a dense area. This list of teams that are going to be talked about over the next 48 hours in that room, I think will be unlike any that they've probably talked about in the last 20 years.
So there you go. The committee has its hands full. And you know, we've seen through the years, the committee has offered some interesting decisions. This could go really either way. All right, so this afternoon, I had the opportunity to speak with ESPN college basketball analyst Seth Greenberg. He and Jay Williams on their studio set, whether it be in Bristol or at the ACC tournament, they have had some spirited conversations about Notre Dame. And I think throughout the week, it's fair to say Jay has felt like Notre Dame is in. Seth feels like the answer is no. Well, did he change his mind at all since the last time he was on ESPN? So I talked to Seth this afternoon, and let's go ahead and play back the audio as he offers his perspective on Notre Dame's bubble status. ESPN college basketball analyst Seth Greenberg joins us on Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat on WSBT Radio. Seth, it's Darren Pritchett. Good to talk to you. How are you today?
I'm doing great. Thank you.
Greatly appreciate your time. And here in South Bend, a lot of people biting their fingernails over Notre Dame being on the bubble, losing to Duke last night, 88-70. Let me just get your impressions on where Notre Dame stands right now in your opinion.
Yeah, that's really hard on me because I absolutely love Mike Bray. I'm a huge, huge Bonzi Colson fan, coached against his dad and knew his dad when he was assistant coach. I just think it would be hard for them to be in the tournament, and yet I know they could win a game. I know they could win two games. But you've also got to be fair to everyone else in the field. Being fair to everyone else in the field, you can't evaluate them differently than everyone else. You know, the loss to Indiana, the loss to Ball State hurt. There's no doubt about it. You know, you have to look at their total body of work and take into consideration, obviously, the injuries. And I think when you do that, unless you look at everyone's injuries and everyone who played without players all season long, it just wouldn't be fair. And it kills me to say that because I love what Mike does. No one could have gotten this team to this point. Bonzi is incredibly, just a tremendous ambassador for college basketball. But I think it's going to be difficult.
And Seth, you bring up a good point because we've talked about the resume, 1-7 against the RPI top 25. Going down the line, they're 8-12 against the top 150. And a lot of people are talking about the eyeball test being a factor. But I mean, how much can the committee really just throw aside those numbers and just focus on Bonzi Colson and Notre Dame the last 2 weeks?
Well, you're going to do that for everyone else.
Yeah.
Because even as you say the last 2 weeks, what does the last 2 weeks consist of? A couple of Pitt wins and a Virginia Tech win. That's it. Is that enough? I mean, again, I don't know.
Seth Greenberg is our guest here on WSBT Radio. And Seth, I know Joe Lenardi said that Notre Dame, he feels like, should be in by common sense, but they needed a good showing against Duke last night. In your opinion, they lost 88-70. How would you describe their showing against the Blue Devils last night?
I thought they played all right. I mean, I thought the second half, Duke overwhelmed them at some point. I thought that they did a good job of containing Matt and the three-point shooting. I thought that they... obviously Marvin Bagley was absolutely phenomenal, but you know Trayvon Duval is playing better as well. Yeah, I don't think close wins are paying people close with the situation that Notre Dame's in helps them. I mean, I don't like. Well, we played Virginia close. Does that count? No, it doesn't count.
Yeah,
you got to win.
Yeah, Seth.
That's the way it is. Just like everyone else has to win. I mean, and again, it kills me to say that because I have. It sounds silly, but a little bit emotionally invested in those. I love those kids. I love Mike. I love what they stand for. I love how they play. I think they'd be great for the tournament. But you know, that's kind of that's the way it is.
Seth, just on one other subject, you look at the Purdue Boilermakers, who had a terrific Big Ten regular season, stumbled down the stretch, didn't win the Big Ten tournament title, falling to Michigan. How would you evaluate where they stand going into the NCAA tournament? Because it appeared they played their best basketball a couple of weeks ago.
Talk about Purdue, I'm sorry.
Yes.
Yeah. I really like Purdue. I think that one thing that's been, you know, and I think Matt's done a great job with this team. And I, again, another team I like the way they play. I think Carson Edwards makes them different because when he gets it going, he can create some easy offense for him off the bounce. If you can play Isaac Haas, which is not easy, and not a lot of people can play him one-on-one and run them off the three-point line, they've not been as effective. But I think in the tournament, they're going to be a tough out because people haven't seen them enough. And you know, when you're in a league and people get a feel for how to play against you, it's a huge advantage. So I think they're a second weekend team and even a potentially Final Four team.
And finally, Seth, just has your opinion changed at all with Michigan, the way they have played the last couple of weeks, beating Ohio State late in the regular season and then winning four games in 4 days in New York City?
Yeah, well, it hasn't changed because for the last 6 weeks I've been high on Michigan. I've seen their defense improve, which is the difference. I mean, we always think of Michigan as great spacing, good passing, good three-point shooting, but this team has an edge, and their edge is on the defensive end. And Xavier Simpson's a terrific on-ball defender. I think that Charles Matthews brings a little bit of a toughness to them. I just think that they're a good team. I think three teams in the Big Ten are potential Final Four teams. Michigan State, Purdue, and I'm not saying they're all going to get there in Michigan.
Very good. Seth, greatly appreciate your time. Thank you so much.
All right, thank you.
Seth Greenberg, ESPN college basketball analyst from earlier this afternoon. So your reaction to his Notre Dame comments, and does it sway you one way or the other?
Well, at one point, I thought Seth was giving a little verklempt. I thought he was going to say, talk amongst yourselves. Rhode Island is neither a road nor an island. Discuss. But seriously, what I agree with him is that Notre Dame didn't have a lot of, you know, wow wins there down the stretch. When Bonzi did come back, a couple pit wins, the Virginia Tech win was really good on a neutral court. He doesn't think the Virginia close calls should count. I kind of do think it does. And what I don't agree with him is that Notre Dame should be evaluated like the same way you do other teams. I don't think so, because those other teams aren't getting an All-America first team player back on their roster. And that is something that the committee has talked about. This is the first year it's really kind of that policy's kind of come back to bite the committee, because now they really have to use it in a way that I can't remember it ever being used before. So that's what's fascinating to me. I think they have an out either way, Darren. If they let them in, you know, how often is this going to happen that you have a first team All-America player that gets added in the last couple weeks of the season? And if they don't let him in, I don't think it sets a terrible precedent again. I don't know that you're going to see this situation repeat itself too often in the years ahead. So I think they're, you know, they have an out either way, whatever they decide to do with Notre Dame. But I think if you say, do you think Notre Dame will get in? I don't think they will. If you say, should they get in? I do think they should.
One number that actually looks good for Notre Dame, the committee always seems to look at how you played away from home, because you're playing away from home in the NCAA tournament. And the Irish, their road and neutral site record combined is 9-8. That's just fine. They're 4-1 on neutral floors, and doggone it, they should have been 5-0, letting that game against Indiana in Indianapolis. That game just unfortunately got away from them. But still, a 9-8 team away from Purcell Pavilion. There's a lot of ways to look at this.
Yeah, and another team that's on the bubble that is really difficult to compare is Middle Tennessee State that Notre Dame is competing with. Now, they're 24-7 Conference USA regular season champs. They lost their first tournament game to Southern Miss, so they were one and done in their tournament. And they went out and played people, but they didn't beat them. They went out and played Auburn, lost to them. Went out and played USC and Miami, lost to those two. So they went out and tried to schedule people, but they didn't win. Their best win is what? Ole Miss, maybe?
But, Eric, I appreciate the fact when teams go out and play somebody in the non-conference.
I do. And that's where, You got, but it would have been nice for them to get one of those. But they did win their conference regular season. It's too bad they went out with their very first tournament game.
Lenardi still has them in the field right now.
Right. But they're another bubble team where it's difficult to compare. The one thing is they played good down the stretch, other than, you know, the they lost to Marshall in their last regular season game to become 16-2 in that conference, and then they lost the... But other than that, they had a long winning streak right before those two losses.
What is their KenPom Sagarin ratings?
That's what.
Give me those numbers.
Do you want me to look that up?
Why don't you? No, you don't have to do that. I don't think we need to worry about Middle Tennessee at this point. At least I don't think so.
Well, I mean, they're, Joe Lenardi has them on the bubble, on the right side of the bubble.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Well, he got 67 of 68 teams right last year. So... I respect his opinion on all these things. I mean, that's all he does. Once the tournament's over, he'll have a mock field of 68 ready to go in the middle of April, or maybe even a couple of days after the NCAA championship.
Middle Tennessee is number 64 in the Sagarin ratings, one spot ahead of Indiana, one spot behind SMU.
Ahead of who?
Indiana.
Thank you. Well.
And Notre Dame is...
20-something.
27.
Yeah.
Wow.
Well, Lenardi uses what the committee uses. So if that's the case, then obviously that number isn't taking life or death. Because Middle Tennessee's 30 spots behind the Irish in that particular ranking, yet they're ahead of them in his pecking order for the NCAA tournament. So it makes you wonder how much that number's used. Because these guys that do the bracketology, they know the formula. They have been through the process with the selection committee in those mock selection committee settings, so they have a really good feel of what they do. And again, Lenardi got 67 of 68 right last year. But he gave the thumbs up, thumbs down today when Jordan Cornette asked him about Notre Dame. He goes, I just don't know.
Notre Dame is 31 in KenPom. Middle Tennessee is 51.
Okay, but yet Middle Tennessee is ahead of Notre Dame by... What, four spots in the latest Lenardi? Three spots?
Okay. Oklahoma is 49. Alabama is being calculated 44. So these are some of the teams we're talking about.
That are ahead of Notre Dame, yet Notre Dame has the better Sagarin rating.
Including the losses without Colson.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're not factoring in those losses, and that's kind of interesting when you look at this. Let me put Texas in here and see what that spits out.
Well, we've blown out the football conversation today. Sorry, Texas we'll get to that on...
Texas is 38. So Notre Dame is ahead of all these teams in the KenPom.
So maybe KenPom doesn't really matter.
I don't know. I think if you're going to justify Notre Dame being in the field, if you're the committee, you've got two tools in Sagarin and KenPom that kind of give you the green light, and that's without taking out the missing Bonzi games. That should be a song, missing Bonzi games.
Are we more confused now on what will happen now compared to the start of the show?
I'm
over processing this.
I'm more confident that you could hit the highest note in one shining moment than we'll get this figured out by the end of the show.
Okay. We got to take a timeout. We are way behind for a break here. 7 minutes in front of 6 o'clock. Eric and Darren on WSBT.
Here's Eric Hansen with what's coming up in tomorrow's South Bend Tribune sports section.
Well, Tom Noy probably wishes he was in Brooklyn today, but instead he will be writing a fine column on Bethel's influence on the Michigan City Boys Basketball Regional. Tyler will have a story on Drew Tranquil, who was recently voted captain, one of the captains for Notre Dame football. We have lots of Michigan basketball, boys basketball, playoff games, and much, much more.
All right, Eric, thank you very much. Just looking at someone on Twitter pointing out that the ACC and the Big East tournaments, there will not be a bid stealer. That everybody that's left in those tournaments will get into the tournament no matter what. So that's good for Notre Dame. But he points out there is the possibility of some theft in the Pac-12, the SEC, the American, the A-10, and the Midwest. And he said maybe Conference USA if Middle Tennessee gets an at-large bid. So there's still many hurdles yet to come where a handful of teams could take away spots from teams like Notre Dame.
Right, and right now, Joe Lunardi has Middle Tennessee in the field as an at-large team.
And he has Notre Dame as team number 70. That's his opinion. All right, we'll come back with more on this subject in just a moment. It is the top of the hour, 6 o'clock, WSBT South Bend. 6:06 on your home of the Fighting Irish, 96.1 FM, WSBT. Eric Hansen, Fighting Irish Football Insider for the South Bend Tribune. I'm WSBT Radio Sports Director Darren Pritchett. We're talking really all things Irish basketball today. Notre Dame losing to Duke in the ACC tournament quarterfinals last night, 88-70. A lot of different opinions on whether Notre Dame will make the NCAA tournament. Fascinating time for this selection committee as they try to evaluate Mike Bray's basketball team, now with Bonzi Colson back for this Fighting Irish basketball team. So we're going to be done at 6:30 tonight because we have ACC tournament basketball to get to from ESPN. Game one is Virginia versus Clemson. Game two will be the matchup between Duke and North Carolina. So coming up in a couple of moments, I'm going to play back an interview that Evan Sharpley and I had today on Leprechaun Lunch with former Notre Dame basketball player and current radio analyst Zach Hillisland. He offered his thoughts on where the Irish stand and the great job Mike Bray did this year, even getting this team in position to earn a bid for the NCAA tournament. There were a lot of times in this second half where it felt like, gosh, this thing is slipping away, it's over, and his team always came back, it seemed like, with a really, really solid effort to get things back on track. Outside of that seven-game losing streak, this team had a lot of good moments in the second half, dealing with all the injuries on top of everything else. So we'll get to Zach coming up in just a couple of moments here on 96.1 WSBT. Why don't we just go ahead and take a second here to go through, well, you know what? I'm gonna backtrack. I'm gonna go a different direction. I'm changing on the fly. We're gonna an audible. Spider two eye banana. Okay? So let's get to Joe Lunardi talking about something you just talked about. Eric brought up right before we went to CBS Sports. Middle Tennessee has added an extra layer of drama to the bubble. It is a mid-major team that had great success in their conference during the regular season, winning the conference title, but then they lose in the quarterfinal round of their conference tournament to the 9-seed Southern Mississippi, who lost to the 4-seed Marshall today in the semifinal. So who is Middle Tennessee State? What do you do with them, and how does it affect teams like Notre Dame on the bubble? So this was Joe Lunardi earlier today on ESPN offering his thoughts on what this Middle Tennessee State loss does to the bubble.
We just ripped through five highlights of all those bubble teams. UCLA, Alabama, Louisville, Notre Dame, Oak State. Came into the night thinking five teams for three spots. Is it now five teams for two spots? Because is one of them reserved for Middle Tennessee? We always have this debate. The quality mid-major versus the middle-of-the-pack major. Middle, not big wins outside of conference, but in the new quadrant system, they have two quadrant one wins. Is that going to be enough to get a team in, which was dominant for 4 months? If it is, then one of those other five is going to be in the wrong tournament.
Joe, let me ask you this. They lost to Marshall twice, and they really do not have a non-conference win to speak of when it comes to the best teams. Do you think that plays into it at all, or do you think their complete body of work and the way that they played in the league carries them through when it comes to Middle Tennessee State?
Well, I tend to fall in favor, Tom, of the season-long excellence because historically those teams perform better in the NCAA tournament. In fact, they perform better by a pretty wide margin if you do a 10 or 15 year study, which we have. Now, Middle in the new system actually does have two quadrant one wins at Murray State and at Western Kentucky. Doesn't sound sexy because they're not power five names, but we all know how difficult it is to go on the road against quality opponents. So for me, I would keep Middle Tennessee in. I guess we'll find out Sunday night.
Okay, so Joe has them in, the Conference USA, regular season champions. And if we're going to talk about quadrants, which the committee looks at, Middle Tennessee and Notre Dame have the same number of Quadrant 1 victories. Notre Dame also has 8 losses against Quadrant 1 teams. So if you're into quadrants, then Middle Tennessee stacks up with Notre Dame. Now, you rambled off some of the other numbers from other sources, and Notre Dame ranks higher in the KenPom and the Sagarin ratings, so advantage Notre Dame there. But again, in the quadrant system, Middle Tennessee is right there with the Fighting Irish. And it does come down to the best team in a mid-major throughout the entire season versus a Power 5 conference team or teams that are quote-unquote middle of the pack. And that's where it gets very difficult for the committee, because it's really difficult to compare Middle Tennessee and Notre Dame and Oklahoma and Arizona State, because they are not going to play anywhere close to the same conference schedules. Now, Middle Tennessee went out and scheduled people. They went on the road. They have to go on the road. Notre Dame never has to leave Purcell Pavilion if they don't want to, other than the Big Ten ACC Challenge. Syracuse has made a living off that through the years of staying in New York. Those mid-majors will do anything to go on the road. Most schools will not play Middle Tennessee. They will not play those type of schools. And that's what makes it difficult on them. And I've always had a heart for the mid-majors, because what are they supposed to do, Eric? If nobody will play them, how in the world can they get the street cred in order to get into the NCAA tournament as an at-large bid? They can't. It's impossible. And just being a big Missouri Valley Conference fan, a lot of those teams have been given a rough shake because teams will not play them. Bottom line. So then all these Power 5 conference schools cry bloody murder when a mid-major gets in over them. Well, you know what? You have the advantage. You can play whoever you want. The mid-majors have to take whatever scraps those Power 5 conference teams will give them. And that's sometimes why I give the benefit of the doubt to the mid-majors. That's just my opinion. That's not the committee's opinion.
Yeah, the thing is, I think that there are some mid-majors where nobody will play, and I think there's some that just want to use that argument. I think Middle Tennessee would be a team that you wanted to stay away from. I could see that being legitimate. Again, they did go out and play people on neutral courts. They didn't win those games, but they were competitive in those games.
The committee asked you to go play those games, and they did. So what more can they do?
Right. I have less of an issue with Middle Tennessee State over Notre Dame than I do Oklahoma.
Agreed.
Yeah. Oklahoma is the team that I think
doesn't belong.
Especially losing. I mean, you didn't even get to the quarterfinals of the Big 12. And there's only 10 teams in that conference. And losing 11 out of your last 15 games, I just don't see how that's a tournament team. Especially, I don't know. I just don't see it.
Alabama is 17-14, 8-10 in the SEC. They have more. Again, now we're going to use the RPI numbers again, but this is just the easiest way to explain to people the situation. So Notre Dame is 1-7 against the RPI top 25. Alabama is 4-4. They have beaten Rhode Island, who is 16, Texas A&M 22, Auburn 8, and Tennessee 9, and actually beating Auburn today. That is a fifth RPI top 25 victory. So they have 4 more top 25 RPI wins than Notre Dame. And against the RPI top 150, Alabama is 15-13. Notre Dame is 8-12. So now, just going by those numbers, and again, there's a lot of more numbers we can throw out there, but that's the easiest to give you an idea of where we stand. That shows you that there is a strong argument Alabama should be ahead of Notre Dame in the pecking order. That's without getting into the eyeball test, which is a totally different conversation.
I think what hurt Alabama before the SEC run here a little bit in the tournament, their first two wins, Texas A&M and Auburn, is they lost 5 in a row, their last 5 regular season games. And that's not an easy conference. Again, there's a lot of parity in the SEC. It's deeper than we've seen the SEC in a long time. But those 5 losses towards the end, And again, there weren't great non-conference wins. You do mention Rhode Island. You know, they lost to Minnesota, lost to UCF, lost by 16 to Texas. You know, where's their marquee out-of-conference wins? Mm-hmm.
So let me throw this at you, a blind resume. This team...
They did beat Oklahoma.
This team has a strength of schedule of 24.
Okay.
If you believe in the RPI, they're 44, 20 spots ahead of the Irish, okay?
Okay.
They went 8-10 in a Power 5 conference.
Okay.
Non-conference strength of schedule, very close to Notre Dame at 162. They are 5-2 against the RPI top 25. And they are 12-13 against the RPI top 150. Would you say that resume... Just generally speaking, what I gave you, is that right there with Notre Dame?
Okay.
The team is Oklahoma.
Yeah.
They're 5-2 against the RPI top 25.
Well, again, they started out a gangbusters. I mean, they were an incredible team to start out. It's just down the stretch.
I agree.
They gave it away.
I'm not saying they deserve to be in ahead against Notre Dame. I just wanted to give you that blind resume. Some of their numbers actually look good, but they were horrible down the stretch. Without question, they had one of the worst stretches of any Power 5 conference team not named Pittsburgh.
Yeah, I mean, you look at the way they came out of the gate and you say, wow, they were impressive. And
they beat Kansas. They beat Wichita State on the road.
They beat Texas Tech. They beat TCU, you know.
USC.
And then all of a sudden, boom.
Yeah, June 23rd, they beat Kansas 85-80, and they were absolutely done at that point. If you end the season right there, they're probably a 4 seed in the NCAA tournament.
Since January 13th, their wins, they have one really good one. Kansas was the first one, then Baylor, 98-96, Kansas State, and then Iowa State in the tournament. Or, I'm sorry, Iowa State before they played Oklahoma State, losing in the quarters. So, I don't know. That doesn't seem to... Notre Dame seems like they've accumulated at least that many good wins. Certainly the Duke win would have helped them. A Duke win would have helped them.
Now, the quadrant system is what the committee's looking at. Just for the sake of generic conversations, Middle Tennessee 0-2 against the RPI top 25, 0-3 against the top 50, 8-6 against the top 150. Strength of schedule 74. Non-conference strength of schedule 11. So see, they went out and played people. Good
yeah,
for
they
them.
Did go out and play people. That's the thing. You're in a mid-major. Your strength of schedule isn't going to be that good because you don't have control over who's in your conference.
No question.
Yeah, the SEC isn't going to admit Middle Tennessee State.
No. Agree there. All right, quick timeout. Some of the thoughts of Zach Hillisland from the Irish Basketball Radio Network next on 96.1 WSBT. 5 minutes left in the program. We're going to join ESPN's coverage of the ACC Tournament semifinals in just a couple of moments. Eric Hansen, Darren Pritchett with you. I filled in for Sean Steyers on Leprechaun Lunch. Sean and Sharpley here on WSBT Radio. That show at noon today. Evan and I spoke with former Notre Dame basketball player and now radio analyst on the Notre Dame Basketball Network, Zach Hillisland. And I asked Zach what he thought of Notre Dame's chances of getting into the NCAA tournament.
We're firmly on the bubble. I understand the case. There's, you know, lots of injuries that we've dealt with. The 7-game losing streak in the middle of this season really sticks out. And then you're looking at some of the teams that you're up against on the bubble. Certainly Louisville stands out as if, you know, if we would have won that game in South Bend, then you really have a case to get over them. It's tough. It kind of felt like they kept moving the target a little bit as well. Like before the it's like you lose to Virginia at Virginia, and all of a sudden you're back in the conversation, and then you beat Pitt, and then you're a little bit further back, which was strange. And then, you know, people kept saying like you win two in Brooklyn, you get to 20 wins, you're probably in. But then it just kept seeming like they were changing the narrative every time you woke up the next day. And kept saying that Notre Dame had more work to do. So certainly was a very difficult task playing Duke, you know, 4 games in 6 days against a Duke team that had 4 full days of rest and 35 NBA players on their team. it was a tough grind. But, you know, Notre Dame's got some really great players. And I think if you're a college basketball fan, you'd be crazy to not want to have Bonzi, Colson, Matt Farrell, and even Marty Gevin in that tournament. Just three great kids, three great stories, and you know, really kind of sums up what college basketball is all about. I know we get really obsessed with all these one-and-done prospects and all that stuff, but these guys have really defined what it means to be a student-athlete, and I think it would be unfortunate if they didn't get into the tournament.
As you look back over the last couple of months, Zach, what did Mike Bray do in order to keep this team alive for a chance to even get into the NCAA tournament? Because after Mike said, after the front nine, things were not looking very good.
Well, that's, I love that you mentioned the front nine thing as well, because he does such a good job of framing the picture for his kids that you can kind of keep your mind in it. And he's done a great job of recruiting good kids in the first place that buy into the program, that take ownership of the program. And you've got these senior that, no, I don't know if I've ever seen a tougher Notre Dame player than Matt Farrell. Like, I don't even want to make eye contact with him. He scares me to death. But, you know, just he brings these guys in who really know how to lead and keep their heads up. And, you know, not many teams are going to take a seven-game losing streak and still keep their heads up and remain positive. I know. I was on one of those teams my senior year, and it was very difficult, you know, especially when you're fighting against the expectations of being a top 20, top 10 team at times. So it's just a testament to the way he manages players and the types of players he brings in the first place.
You know, a lot of the bracketologists, Zach, over the last 48 hours have talked a lot about Notre Dame. It's a unique case with Bonzi Colson. And we just played a soundbite from Joe Lenardi of ESPN right before you came on the show. And one of the things he mentioned before the Duke game was he felt like Notre Dame should be in. By common sense. And I think we all agree with that. Now, there's some analytics that a lot of other teams would point to. Notre Dame is 8-12 against the top 150, 1-7 against the top 25, on and on we go. But one thing Joe said before the Duke game, he felt like as long as Notre Dame had a good showing against Duke, he feels like they deserve to be in. Now, I don't want you to put yourself in the committee seat, but if you heard someone say, well, Notre Dame needs to have a good showing against Duke, do you think they accomplished that last night?
I actually think they did accomplish that last night. I know it was kind of a tale of two halves, but the first half was absolutely great. And, you know, you miss a couple free throws as well. If you make four free throws, you're tied up at halftime with possibly the most talented team in the country. And you really showed that you could battle with those guys. And I mean, there were some of the rebounds that Duke was grabbing last night were absolutely insane. They're at the top of the backboard, for God's sake. So to see our guys go out and battle and kind of go toe-to-toe with those guys for the first half was great. And, you know, the second half got a little sloppy. There were some turnovers there.
Zach Hillisland from the Notre Dame Basketball Network. That's going to wrap up Sports Beat, brought to you by Budweiser and Notre Dame Hockey. Now let's join ESPN's coverage of the AC.